These religions came to being like out of the Hindustan when masters left the sea. Those who met them, they also saw the mystery of life, they knew themselves and knew your self. These formations were raised with a very noble purpose, so that many people may derive benefit from joining that formation. As long as there were practical people who could give you demonstrations of all these things, it was going all right. For as time passes, for want of practical people, and further, from the day this paid preaching had started, you see, this preaching was only for those people who found some mystery, solved the mystery, and could explain practically to the other people. Now it has become a professional experience. Normally, resulted in the same formation, resulted in stagnation, and stagnation resulted in deterioration. When come up, Master, well, dear friends, you're going to meet, what is all this for? God is light, we are the children of light. We are all born in the same way, with all privileges like the same outer sensation, inner sensation. We have got bodies, we have got intellect, but we are conscious entities, we have known so much about physical body, intellect, but no literal understanding, practically have got a mind. Theoretically we don't know. But unless you rise above body consciousness, how can you see? Masters come to open our eyes. Quran says that God sealed our eyes and ears, we are standing on here. And the Master come to open those seals from the eyes and from the ears, to enable you to see and to hear. So when you come to the Masters, you say, our inner eyes closed, so to say, I mean, spiritually we are blind. In the Master's terminology, blind means whose inner eyes not open. Not that were two, not two eyes on the forehead, but whose inner single eye is not open. So we come to the Master, you see, first you don't see, we are blind inner, and you close it, you don't see anything. When you are sitting, you begin to see something. What? Light of God? You begin to hear the music of the spheres. We are deaf before. He opens those feet. This is what Christ also said, I have come, what for? To make those people see who do not see, and those who see, they may be blind. What does that mean? We see outside, so our attention is here. When it will be dark from that, you do not see anything outside. If you draw your attention within ourself, that darkness is thin and you see light. So these are practical things, you see. Awakening is coming always, men awaken minds, they revolt. They are not satisfied with the mere blindly following only ritual. They must be put before them, must be stand far. Pity it is, the outer temples, churches and other places of worship, they have overrided the true temple of God, I would say like that. True temple of God is man body. Models were made outside, showing such light and such a sound within you. This was meant for the beginner. Those inner eyes were not open as yet. For those whose eyes are open, for them the man body is the true temple of God. So unless you rise above body consciousness, as I told you, withdraw your attention from all outside and from the body below, and you know yourself, only then the inner eyes open, you see the light of God. So for that you see what is required, ethical life. If you are too much given up to the outside world, how can you draw all attention from there? Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So for that, We see now, you see, can we see? That is general question put to the master. They say yes. We can see in now, but with proper guidance and help. When you are given something to start with, some capital to start with, if any man comes up to give you a very wonderful talk on business lines, but those who have given that talk, whoever has got no money, you must give them some capital to start with. So, this matter of knowing oneself, the practice of demonstration to be given by some adept on the way, call him by any name, who in word made flesh, who sees and can make you see. This is all masters, everywhere, in all scriptures is laid down. If you want to see God, open your inner eye and know yourself first, then you see the open eye, inner eye open and see God. Come to somebody who sees and who has seen and makes you see. If he himself doesn't know, truly speaking, he cannot give you the right interpretation of the scriptures also. But scriptures contain only what the old master saw and gave up. Now the right interpretation can be given only by someone who has seen or sees. And we are not convinced unless we see our own selves. So the criterion of a master is given as given by scripture is what? Who can give you a demonstration how to rise up above body consciousness, know yourself, open your inner eye, see begin to be. And you testify it is so. It is not something to be given to you later on in life or after death. Where's the proof that you will have it after all? The word in hand is better than two in the bush. So master give out something to start with very first day, and then we have to tell further. And give, he says, stop no further. Past action reactions go on. Stop, make your life clean. For that he advises what? That is. So my purpose is, proper guidance helps you can know God. So word made flesh only can give you God. Word is the controlling power us in the body. It is the God in creation power. So teachings of the masters are what? Sum up to man-making. Man-making not only physically, not only intellectually, but spiritually too. We have, of course, known ourselves physically, intellectually also. But we have known little or nothing. For that is in all master sense. So there are some cornerstones to have these, to know oneself and know God later. So first thing is to know oneself. Unless we have known ourselves, we can't like and know the light. So this is first argument. For that everywhere you find all masters have given reference to these things. Christ gave out, except you be born in you, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. Kingdom of God cannot be had by observation, it is in your very chamber. Unless you draw from outside, you see, how can it be? It is we who have to see. And we, the outer expression of which is not. Attention is identified in the world outside, how can he within, which is controlling us in the body? I am looking at you in front, but I don't look behind. Unless you see behind, what is it? How can you see what is behind? There is something like this here. Our attention is to be riveted. This is truly speaking no oneself. When you see some power is working. So for that you have to rebound. One is this man body, the other is the beyond. Knowledge of the beyond, that is the reply. By knowing which, nothing else remains to be known. So Master will give you a birth. You have that second birth at the feet of the Master. They give you a demonstration of that. You must be reborn. Now once you do also twice born, this is in the old days, 5 years, 7 years old children, 9 years old children will make twice born. They will give Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri Mantra means praise, it's a prayer, O God, raise us above these bodies. Open your eye to see the rays of the sun, and rise up to the sun. O God, direct our attention to that. This is a prayer. And the demonstration of this light was given to 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old children. That ritual still stands among Hindus. They are made twice born, children made twice born. They are given the same mantra, but no demonstration. That is why all masters are said, learn to die, so that you may begin to live. To die means just leaving your body at zero. While alive, it's the same process as one man at the time of leaving the body. When you have that, you are not to die forever. I mean, in actual death, the silver cord which is very healthy, and the reaction like path is broken, you are not to return. But in this you can then come and go. Those who know how to come and know oneself, know our God, there is no fear of death. What is that? It is leaving this physical body and going into the beyond. Sunset this way, rising the other way. But it is for those who have sat at the feet of the Master, they can rise above body consciousness regularly, daily. That is the thing, boss, I die daily. Only if you take cross daily, you are not my disciple, Christ said. Unless you take cross daily, you are not my disciple. Disciples are those who leave everything, take cross daily. Take crossing daily means rise up. So these are some things, you see, given in the scriptures, where which can be had practically at the feet of somebody who knows that you can be. Wanted a demonstration of that. So for that there are some cornerstones, you see, and that is first is satsang. Meeting, sitting at the feet of those who have solved the mystery of life, who see God and they see you, they see the God in you, and open your inner eye, a single eye, to see the God of the Spirit and power which is light in the form of light itself. And they tell us one thing, not only you will lecture on that, they give you a practical demonstration how to rise above body consciousness. The same process that you got at the time. For that, naturally, we cannot rise above body consciousness unless we are not attached to the world too much. So, an ethical life is required for that. If you have given up to voluntary way of living, how can we die from the body? So, truth is above all, the true living is still above truth. That is the keynote to know oneself. The other step comes for keynote is to sit at the feet of the Master, orated from the way. And third thing, to follow implicitly what he says. He will give you something to start with. You have to dwell further. That's not the end all. ABC starts only. When the world class is at this religion starts, ABC of the religion starts. So go on, it is just the beginning, I say. Then there's the astral body, there's the causal body, there's the super body. You have to go beyond, shake off all these bodies in which we are enveloped. So these are the, that is why, you see, we don't like to die. Nobody wants to die. We want to live here for some time more. Why? Because we do not know how to leave the body. That's a no bugbear, it is leaving. Man body lies above, I come from India, no more there, I'm here. I left that place. Things have to leave this physical body and rise above it. That is why, if he, daily I come already twice, now I am not afraid of coming up here because I know there is a place, my friend there, you see. There is something like that. Though the Master gives you the demonstration of this rising above body consciousness, first thing, everything. And for that, I say, the key to knowing oneself is actual life. To sit at the feet of the Master, have a demonstration, and live by according to command. If you love me, keep my commandments, this is what Christ said. If you don't know, take God daily, then you are not my disciple. These are the things, even all masters in their own language. As you are converted with the Bible teaching, they are the same. I have written one book, you see, Naam and Word, giving quotation from all scriptures, original quotation. You find the sense? This is the basic teachings of all masters. So, of course, there are two knowledges. One is of the exalted side, which is called Apravinya, which is called Sofina by the Mohammedans, and the inner knowledge is called Paravidya, of the beyond, that starts only when you rise above body consciousness. So long as we do not rise above body consciousness, we are strangers to the life beyond. So we are afraid of, as I told you, why we are afraid of dying, why we want to live here, because we do not know how to leave the body. All glory and beauty lies within you. If you are given a demonstration of it and you daily practice to rise, you die daily, then it is pleasure to you. Kabir said, people, when they hear the name of death, they are terrified. And when I hear the name of death, I am overjoyed. See? The astral plane is more visual than the physical, and the cause is still more. Alright. So this is the keynote to knowing oneself. And that has been the teaching of all masters who came in the past east, that's why. So we want to start with today, something to start with. And this is one for all mankind, whether you wear out the labels of one region or the other, that makes no difference.
Okay. We have 20 minutes for questions and discussion, and then 5 minutes for a blessing.
Do you teach that God is Sat-Chit-Ananda?
Sat-Chit means Sat means eternal, Chit means all wisdom. Ananda means Lord Jai, and our soul, we have got in our soul the same three aspects. Yeah, we have got reflection of that in our soul.
Fine. The last part of the question was, do you teach that God is form? Form.
God is form, and God is formless, and God is even beyond both these. When God is absolute, nobody says. When it came to reflection, some form is taken, light or whatever it, you might say, and when that materializes in man body, so something like that.
When you reach eternal life, while this earth, in this body, can anyone take it away from you?
If anybody, Master, has met us, did not Christ say, what I have seen and shown in anybody, nobody has any power to pluck him away from me? So, word made flesh, you see, when he gives you something to start with, that is never, he will never pass away, never perish, that remains. What? This is with the grace of God, people are having it, of course, and with the grace of my Master. They are having so far, not me, but the God in me, you see, and the grace of my Master.
Why do we not see the light and hear the sound when we meditate
faithfully? The reason is given to you if you heard the talk attentively. This has been explained, I think, more than half an hour. Why do you not see? Why Master make us see and how to see? There we draw our attention from outside and from the body below, raise up to the level of the eye level. where the single eye opens. When until that eye is open, you cannot see light. If there is somebody who gives you sitting and makes open that inner eye, you will see light. Because our attention, which is outer expression of our soul, that is not withdrawn from outside, and risen above body consciousness, that eye is not open, we cannot see that. I explained that thing just now, quoting the Christ's words, I have come to make people see who do not see, and those who see, they may be blind. This is attention, you see, diverted from outside and withdrawn from the body when you rise up to see that. But if you can do yourself well and good, if not, at the instruction of some experience with somebody who can give you, then the God in him will be able to give you.
Question back there.
Master says that when you come to the eye focus or the seat of the soul, which is the inner eye, and you meditate at this point,
attention will come from outside. Attention will come from
withdraw from outside. In other words, in meditation is a form of prayer, as we all know. Everything from the eye center down, you block out with your mind first. Then you control the mind and look with your soul, with your entity, into the darkness, which is here. And your God Self will raise you up and give you light, and as you move upward, you will hear the sound. Master said this morning that you are a drop of the ocean of all consciousness. And there's no way you can be separated from God. It's just a question of finding out how to get closer.
Practical things can't be had by seeing practical. It has happened.
There's a question back there. If you are an initiate, and your children are, and they will not do the meditations, what can you do about it?
It says that they're an initiate and their children are initiates, but they won't meditate.
Then what to do? They send all children to me then. Look here, one thing. You have brought up children, and you cannot make them sit for that. What are your hair be more blunt? What are you people like you having parents, you see? Those who not set example for the children and make them do something politely, friendly and lovingly. So that example is better than beside. If you sit down, children will only copy. They will give to
children should copy. Children should copy. If you sit and meditate, they will come to copy you. Who are the Maharaji?
If you take time and responsibility to make him sit morning and evening, and just adhere to the strict vegetarian diet, you are welcome.
Another one. How can you still your mind to meditate? You mind
look here. Mind is, you see, after enjoyment. If you give him more enjoyment elsewhere, you leave these outer enjoyments and enjoy that. To give more of this, that is within you, giving you a demonstration. If you attach your mind, will never come out.
If you continue to let your mind wander and have its way, there is no limit to what the mind will demand of you. You are the entity, the soul, is the boss of the mind. The mind is an instrument. Make it work for you. Do not be a slave to it. Block it out. Give it the order. It will obey. It takes time.
Well, more or less, you get more bliss inside, not the other way.
more bliss when you go inside than when you let it go outside.
Does your name have a meaning in English, Kripal Singh?
Hmm?
What does it mean in English?
Name's got no meaning, see? Kripal Singh means, Kripal means gracious. That's all. Merciful.
Can there be several such masters at any one time on that planet?
Master?
Can there be several such masters?
There can be no harder to partial against it, you see, because master is world made flesh. World can manifest anywhere. World is the master, not the son of man, but the son of man is created in which he manifests. So light is the same bulb, but the bulb be lit by that light. There's no harder one. It's his soul that has it.
Is it a mistake to think of God or to worship God as a person?
God, you see, formless, with form, and both beyond form and formless. When it materializes, it manifests in any human pole, we respect him naturally. Bulb is one fuse, the other photon, the other. There are so many bulbs. The bulb in the light is connected. From that you can get light. We are the worship of the light in man, not the son of man.
Worship the light in man, not the son of man.
We respect that thing which that bulb is, that light is working.
Respect the son of man.
And you'll find the such like man where they lived, they became the places of pilgrimage.
Wherever these men live, you find their place of pilgrimage.
All this will be solved when you know yourself. That was the subject today. And knowing oneself comes when you rise above body consciousness. That's a practical demonstration. When you see, you testify yourself what is what, life, God is life. When you see for your own self, no testament required. And that's the criterion of a master, that you should not believe him unless you see that with your own eyes and hear that with your own ears. That's the criterion of a master.
Give us the blessing.
Which one?
Will you give us the blessing?
Yes, yes.
You.
You? You are it.
Oh. We can be here all the time. You are so seldom with us.
Oh, my blessings are with you. God bless you all. What I didn't know, I put before you in my talk, about 50 minutes. Just if you're not part of it, you may have personal interviews to clarify more things. I'll attend the talks which are to be given, not tonight and tomorrow and the day after. Also attend the meditation hours if you want to see things for your own self, that will give you something to convince you that there's light within you and not there. Somebody asked the master, how can the outer faculty be inverted? He said, better sit down and see. So this is a practical question, you see, one for all. Man knows thyself. Whether you are bearing the label of one school of thought, you know, that makes no difference. That shows only in which school of thought you are guided to know God. But to know God, you must know yourself first. This is the first step. This is the, what is it? What is that by knowing which all else becomes known? This is knowing oneself first. The whole thing is which actually starts when you know yourself. When the world last is end, there the religion starts, truly. Read it back, lead you to bind back your soul to God. In a nutshell, it's your way. But it's a practical question to be seen practically, not decided by intellectual wrestling. Intellectual they help to understand things, but to understand then have it practical. So my blessings are for you. I pray God may God draw you nearer to Him from day to day, wherever you are. We are all brothers and sisters in God.
Good evening, and welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last 30 minutes of the talk titled, Why Do We Not Rise Above Body Consciousness? Master gave the talk on 26th October 1972 in Chicago. Our reader this evening is Rick Casey. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Pradeep. This evening, I'll be reading, excuse me, from the book Prayer, Its Nature and Technique, from the version that is on the website. Starting with chapter 15, titled Time for Prayer. Prayer needs no specific time nor any particular hour. In fact, one can pray without ceasing. It is an ebullition of spirit, and like a volcano may burst at any moment. Prayer should, however, be offered regularly at any time during the day or night. Early morning hours and evening twilight hours are, of course, very congenial and most suitable. At the ambrosial hour of the early dawn, be ye in communion with the divine word and meditate on his glory, Guru Nanak. Most of us search for a time for prayer and unfortunately are so busy that in the end we find no time at all. A prayer does not need any philosophic dissertation or elaborate arrangement. One has just, in loving faith, to express his inner urge in the simplest words possible. A true prayer needs no particular time and place. We have to sit quietly in the temple of the body, at the seat of the soul, and to gaze in between the eyebrows and mentally repeat whatever charged words have been given to us by the Master. That is more than enough of a prayer. But the trouble with us is that we do not know how to pray. We may, in a case like this, simply ask, O Lord, teach us how to pray. In this respect, we can be guided by the specimen prayers given by the various masters. Chapter 16, Occasion for Prayer. We generally pray when we are in distress and trouble, but when we escape therefrom, we begin thinking that we wrought liberation by our own efforts, and thereafter do not feel the need for prayer. We must guard against such serious pitfalls. Prayer, in fact, is needed at every step. When in difficulty, we may pray to escape therefrom. In distress, when all else fails, the thought of the omnipotent Father gives solace to the mind. When success be in sight, then pray how you may not get elated and puffed up and ask for God's grace and bounty, for without these we can never succeed. After the fulfillment of our desires, or riddance from difficulties, we must render thanks to the Almighty for His favors. When God is the loving Father, and we cannot do without Him at all, prayer must become a part of our very being. Next chapter, Prayer and Sin. A mere confession of sins and shortcomings in prayer does not avail anything. If we think that by mere confession our sins can be washed off and we can once again indulge in them freely, we are wrong. Such an attitude, far from being a saving force, keeps us perpetually down in sins. Redemption is the gift that comes either from God or the God-man who specifically comes for the benefit of sinners. Our job is just to understand his commandments and to keep them scrupulously, leaving the rest to him. How may one know the truth and break through the cloud of falsehood? There is a way, O Nanak, to make his will our own, his will which is already wrought in our existence. Guru Nanak. Every action has a reaction. Every act of omission or commission has an appropriate penalty. We cannot escape from sin as long as we consider ourselves as born of the flesh, for flesh is the root cause of all evils in the world. Until a spirit learns to leave the sensual plane at will, enjoyments and distractions do thrive like a bay tree. Too much indulgence means distress. Enjoyments lead ultimately to disease. Pleasures cannot chase away pain. Without his acceptance, one wanders in the wilderness. Guru Nanak. God is all love. To think that it is because of our forgiveness that he forgives us for trespasses, or else he would not do so, is to misunderstand him and make a misuse of prayers as a means for doing more wrongs. The man of God, on the other hand, has a twofold plan of dispensation. While granting forgiveness for faults, on the one hand, he remonstrates severely against repetition. Thus far and no further is his admonition. Go and sin no more was a familiar phrase with Christ when he used to forgive the sinners. In this way, he works out his purificatory process, and the spirit is chiseled into a shape and form that may be acceptable to God. Prayer, per se, cannot alter his law of dispensation, nor help to reach him. It is only the loving and intense longing for God and strict obedience to the commandments of the God-man that make a prayer a means leading Godward. Love, and not loud prayers, is the cornerstone of God's law of redemption. If we lovingly depend upon the strong arm of the God-man, his grace gushes out spontaneously from the fountain of love in him. Reciprocity in love is proverbial indeed, and there is no limit to his saving grace. Even the penalty that he imposes is tinted with rays of love with no trace of rancor in it. Next chapter, Prayer for Others. Since all souls are of the same essence as of God and are correlated with each other, one may as well pray for the benefit of others. High souls always pray for the good of the entire humanity. They are not content with the greatest good for the greatest number, as is commonly sought by the leaders of society. Their prayers generally end with the words, O God, do good unto all. The Muslims first pray for the Mu'mins, their brethren and chaste, and thereafter for all the rest. The Buddhists likewise pray for all. Christ even suggested prayer for one's enemies. Amongst the Hindus, it is a common practice to close their prayers with a few charitable words for all living creatures, great and small. Some people offer prayers for the ills of the entire humanity, and still others make use of it in the case of individual ailments. Telepathy has now conclusively proved how heartstrings between individuals play in unison, irrespective of distance between the two. There is a tremendous power in thought vibrations, and their range is unlimited. Is not the coming into being of the countless universes and their dissolution the result of some thought force, if we may be permitted to use the phrase as indicative of God's will, no matter what we call it, karma, word, hukam, or bana? Thus, the sympathetic chords between the master and the disciples carry silent messages of love to and fro between them with a force that is unimaginable. This wonderful relationship one can establish with God by being in tune with the infinite. One can, by force of thought, do a lot of good to others, as at bottom all are embedded in the same soil, the divine ground. Next chapter, acceptance of prayers. It is a common experience that most of our prayers get no response. The reason for that is not hard to find. We have not yet learnt the will of God and how that will works entirely for our benefit. In our ignorance, we very often pray for things that, in the long run, are likely to do more harm than good, and no wonder that the loving Father, in His boundless compassion for us, does not accept such prayers, and they bear no fruit. Or else we would never be able to escape from sensual enjoyments. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts. Again, we, ignorant of ourselves, beg often our own harms, which the wise powers deny us for our good. So find we profit by losing of prayers. Shakespeare. George Meredith tells us to remember, he that rises from prayer a better man, his prayer alone is answered. Again, we generally pray to God for miracles, and no wonder such prayers are not granted. Whatever a man prays for, he prays for a miracle. Each prayer reduces itself to this: Great God, grant that twice two be not four. Turgenev. All the time we are living a sensual life and have not yet known that there is another side of the picture as well, life beyond the senses. Most of our prayers are, therefore, of a temporal nature, and if they were granted without any exception, we would naturally sink lower and lower in the scale of moral values, and our sins would increase more and more day by day, and there would hardly be a chance to get out of these prison houses of the world and of the body and bodily enjoyments, with the result that we would forever remain an exile from the kingdom of God, a lost province with no hope for for reunion. When a disciple remembers the Master, he experiences within him, a soothing influence and a sort of divine intoxication. This is known as telepathy, or sympathetic communication, from heart to heart, from a distance. In the same way, we can, by turning our attention with the infinite, draw upon the great reservoir of God power and utilize that for the beneficent good of others. For this purpose, one has to unite his self in the divine ground wherein all are embedded, and from there pass on the heavenly influence to the individual or society desired to be benefited. In this attitude, one has not to place the desire of others before the Creator, but has simply to invoke his loving pleasure and await his grace to work out the desired result. If radio's slim fingers can pluck a melody from night and toss it over a continent or sea, why should mortals wonder if God hears prayer? Ethel Roaming Fuller. But man is just a part of the creation, and each individual but an infinitesimal speck therein. Granted, as we are with a limited vision, we do not know and understand that grand plan, that mighty maze, as Alexander Pope, the laureate of peace, puts it. It is indeed too much for presumptuous man, so weak, so little, and so blind, a tiny part of the vast machinery of his creation. Again, the great poet tells us, "Heaven from all creatures hides the book of fate. All but the page prescribed their present state. All nature is but art, unknown to thee. All chance, direction, which thou canst not see. All discord, harmony not understood. All partial evil, universal good. In spite of pride, in erring reason's spite, the truth is clear. Whatever is right. Know then thyself. Presume not God to scan. The proper study of mankind is man. Chaos of thought and passion all confused. Great Lord of all things, yet a prey to all. Sole judge of truth, an endless error hurled." Each one, therefore, from his narrow angle of vision, prays for a thing and knows not how it will fit in the cosmic order. In the hot and sultry months, for example, people living in towns pray for a refreshing shower, while in the rural areas, peasants at the same time ask for more sunshine and heat for ripening their corn. Man looks not beyond his nose. He does not even know what is good for him. Often he asks for things which, when granted, become a veritable source of nuisance to him, and with much regret, he has to retrace his steps. The story of the Golden Touch is significant in this connection. King Midas, after much longing and prayer, got the boon of converting everything he touched into gold. After a few moments of happiness, he realized his mistake. The food he put into his mouth turned into a lump of gold. The water, as it touched his lips, solidified into gold. his only daughter, as she came running and embraced him, became a statue of gold. As he went to the soft bed, he found himself on hard metallic cushions. God or God-man knows best. Our past and future are like an open book to him. He would never grant such prayers as are ultimately baneful to us. How can the loving Father give to a child that which might prove a poison to him? A Persian poet says, "My God is more anxious than myself to fulfill my needs. All my endeavors in this behalf are but torturous deeds." One should pray to God for such gifts as he may consider beneficial. O God, I know not what is good for me, for I am immersed head and ears in the maze of the world. Ravi Das. Khwaja Nizami prayeth, O God, thou alone art my well-wisher. Show me the way whereby I may win thy grace and attain salvation. In the Holy Quran, also, it is stated that people ought to pray for that which may be useful both in this world and in the next. Next chapter, the need for prayer. We cannot win God either by flattery or by vain repetitions, nor does he stand to gain or lose anything, whether we offer prayers or not. Compassionate as he is, his grace is always at work in each and all alike, for we cannot live without it. We can, however, attract that grace to our advantage by becoming a fit receptacle for it. Humility and faith purify the mind and make it a fit instrument for God's grace. These two aids help in inverting the lotus of the mind, which is at present attuned with the senses. Unless we are able to turn its direction upward, God's grace cannot flow directly into it. Prayers, humble and sincere, help in establishing a harmony between man's mind and God's grace. He needs no forensic arguments and legal acumen in defense of our deeds and needs. All that is required is a pure and loving heart attuned to his grace, and the latter is automatically attracted to it. God is all love, and we cannot ask him to be more loving. He is omniscient, and we cannot, by loud and strong prayers, make him any wiser. Perfection cannot be made more perfect by our protestations and prayers. We must learn to stand and wait, as the classic poet Milton puts it, and his grace shall of its own be attracted and flood our very being. God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts. Who best bear his mild yoke, they serve him best. His state is kingly, thousands at his bidding speed, and post o'er land and ocean without rest. They also serve who only stand and wait. John Milton. God is an unchangeable permanence and eternally the same. He was when there was nothing. He was before all ages began. He existeth now, O Nanak, and shall exist forevermore. Guru Nanak. Eternity is ever in love with the products of time. W.B. Yeats. The way to God's grace lies not in striving and crying. It is enough for man to sit silently as a receptacle for divine breath, which bloweth where it listeth. It is merely by waiting and trusting that one arrives at the ultimate truth, which cannot be apprehended at all, except as it is focused upon the soul of man. Here lies the advantage of prayer, which molds a correct attitude or approach to the divine will. Wheresoever I turn my face, thou art there. Why should I pray to anyone else? When I see thou art there to listen to my prayer, O Lord. Guru Arjan. Man's only duty is to be ever grateful to God for his innumerable gifts and blessings. On the contrary, we become so infatuated by them that we not only lose him, but lose our own self also in the plenitude of his bounties, and more often than not are carried off our feet by the whirlwind of desires. We get attached to the gifts, forgetting the bountiful Lord, for we have forgotten that we have to die someday. Guru Arjan. Next chapter. The advantages of prayer. Prayer is the essence of spirituality. It affords a wonderful recreation to the body, mind, and soul. It brings in complete satisfaction and satiation, which nothing else can give. Peace which comes from prayer, the peace which comes with prayer, is of a unique nature, quite unimaginable, a kind of serenity that descends upon the subliminal self within. Prayer has in it a great dynamic force. It strengthens and befits a person to face and fight the battle of life fearlessly and successfully. It is, in fact, the only panacea for all types of ills, adibhutak, diseases and ailments, adidevak, accidents over which man has no control, adiatmak, evil propensities of the mind, and above all, brings in inner peace and satiety. It buckles a person with courage and fortitude and brings about a complete reorientation. Prayer is the key that unlocks the kingdom of heaven. It pulls up the sluice gates and releases from within immense power and resourcefulness. Well, I have come to the end of my time. I was reading from the book Prayer, Its Nature and Technique, chapters 15 through 21. Thank you, Master, for everything.
Thank you, Rick, for reading the nuances of praying to us. 56 of us attended today's satsang. Thank you all for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So our Master tells us that they say you and that God power is both within this man body. And where are you? You are just identified with your world outside. Why don't you withdraw your attention from outside? He is waiting for you within you.